Hello, everybody. Welcome to the new bonus episodes, or the bonus series, for the second season. I attended the Costa Rican Big Data School, and, you know, I thought that maybe some of you can take some value out of this. You know, many aspiring computer scientists and software engineers would really benefit from the things that they talk about in this event. This was a five-day event from Monday through Friday, from 8 to 4, so it was pretty extensive, and they talked about a lot of different subjects and, you know, very important things that you got to know in this day and age with big data and data science and data analysis. So I thought, you know what? I'll put this up. Maybe some of my listeners can take advantage of this and can benefit from listening to really, really high-end professors from the Texas Advanced Computing Center. So our instructors will be Wei-Ya Xu. He's a PhD and the group lead for Data Mining and Statistics Group. Prior to joining TAC, he obtained a master's degree in biological sciences and a doctoral degree in computer science from the University of Texas at Austin. Then there's also Charlie Day. Charlie Day is the Director of Training and Professional Development with the User Services Group at TAC, with a background in web development and scientific computing. Charlie's responsibilities at TAC include organizing, developing content, and building curriculums for TAC's academic course selection taught in conjunction with several departments at the University of Texas at Austin, as well as for TAC's professional development and educational team. Oh, well. Oh, and just a quick thanks to Danny Xie, who was the one who recorded these segments. Without him, we wouldn't have this awesome bonus round. So thank you very much, and enjoy.
Okay, so if you do not have a working Zapier, that's fine. You can just follow through either your neighbors or just follow through my slides. The reason we have a limitation right now is we want to run the with our Hadoop cluster. But Zapier itself is actually very useful tool. I can run it without Hadoop clusters. So after I've done the lecture for this part, I will also let you know JavaScript that you can run without Hadoop clusters that you everybody can get a chance to try and verify. So for here, all the things I have from I want to show in the demonstration you can practice, I also have in the slides. So if you just follow on with my slides in the lecture, that should be fine for today as well. Okay, so let me continue with the setup with introductions. So the purpose here is really just to be able to help you understand the Spark programs. And a lot of the Spark program and documentation, like example given in the Scala format, they are very similar to other programming language, but just with some special, its own unique features. So here, I'm just going to focus on those features. So we introduce the variables, and the main thing about variables is the Scala make a big deal to differentiate the mutable and immutable variables. So that's the things you have to keep in mind. And then for the function part, the Scala uses several operators that seems hard to understand at first, but once you know what they mean, and it will be easier to understand this, right? So for example, just by looking at what I'm showing here, what do you think this one does? Or what this means, yes? Yeah, so it's basically a function, right? So it's like we are just doing something on paper. We may say we want to x became 2 times larger, x times 2. So that's a simple form of defining a function the Scala adopted in their programming language. So you can give the function parameters in the parentheses on the left hand, so in this case x, and then the semicolons are followed by the type, so you're parsing by integer means, and then the error itself is means is a defined that function. So you think about this as a transformation. So what the function does is going to transform the input into something else. For this one, it's a simple statement. Then whatever on the right hand of this arrow is what you want to execute. So for this time, it's times two. If you have multiple lines, and you can use parentheses to put the multiple lines in there, so you can do more things with it. Then for the scalar functions and the other things you do not see is sometimes you need, like in C or in Java, you need how what the value you want to return. But in a scalar function, you do not have to tell that. By default, it will return the result of your last line in your function. So in this case, we print something and then we will return the x times 2 that result as a result of that function type. So why the scalar function using this simple form to define the function is in the Spark and in many of the big data processes, one of the central ideas we have been keep mentioning is we want to bring the computation to where the data is. So in a lot of the programming construct, what we want to pass in through with a different function or different steps is another function or another method rather than another value. So that's very different from the traditional programming language like C and Fortran, where you want to parse either pointer or the object along. Here, we treat the function as an object, and we want to pass that function along. So if you want to pass a function along, then instead of defining a function formally, and you can have a simple form helps to define our functions more smooth and streamlined ways. So we see this example before. So basically, we have a list. Then we want to apply this multiply by two function and then apply to every single element to that list. The my function will automatically apply say, for each element. We'll get the elements and use them as an input parameters to the function we pass to and collect the result of the output. And then the result will be automatically became another list. So it makes the things much simpler. You have this is the complete way to use this, but when you get more used to it or you read more, you will realize the type parameters may not be necessary. So you can ignore them, so it became simply as x, became x times 2. And then, what more commonly, if you read some standard code, that will become even simpler, just became, say, a underscore times 2. And that does the same thing as this one does. So basically, the underscore representing the whole thing here. Right? So the underscore is, you will see that a lot in a lot of mature standard code. It gives a way for you to make the code become really concise, really short. The underscore here is just like a wild match character or wild match parameter. So whatever given to it is going to be applied this operation into it. So you can think about them as a replacement for x, the arrow, and then the x again. You will see more of these underscore operators. You will gradually understand and hope you appreciate and how simplified it makes the program looks. If you have a good parameters and you can define them as the tuples, like this way, so this is parentheses can be multiple input parameters and it's speaking the same way to the mind and to return them. So in here, what we do is we have two input parameters and then we will return the sum of the two parameters. On the left is what we show. It's a more like the previous way, like we have this tuples count. The tuple itself is represented by x. Then we can use underscore 1, underscore 2 to refer in each individual positions. So that's similar to the previous one we showed here, but just with the two variables. We can, in the next several slides, I will introduce another function on the match and the case, where you can map your input automatically into this tuple form. So if you know your input is a count with two value tuples, and in the integers, if you match them directly to here, you can actually match the individual positions into the different variable. So instead of doing x and the underscore y to specify the positions, you the match case functions directly match them into two variables as x and y, so just return x and y. Okay. So the multiple statements, you can include them in the parentheses. And then what if you have multiple return values? You can either input, you can do a tuples, and you can also return by the tuples. So in this case, it's a very simple case. You have a XY coordinates, and you want to do some translations, and then you can, X I will only pass 3, for Y I will only pass 5. So you guys think type of tuples out, and with the value being modified, I think. For all of this, and what the things you like, so this is one of the most common form of the function being designed, being defined in here. Any questions? So what do you see? Is there something missing in these functions compared to other programming language where when you want to define a function? Yeah, there's no function name, right? So here, all you define is the input parameters and what's the return or what you're going to do. So it's a very good for short blocks, and then you just pass them dynamically or with your another functions being embedded in there. But what if you want some function you want to be reusable? So you do have the option to give a name to it. Just add your name before the parameters are between the function names here. And then later you can call that function. So the rest of them is the same. It's in this case, you just add a name on the left hand. Okay, so that's about the functions. So a lot of time you see in the skylights anonymous functions. The reason I want to emphasize that is in the Python, and that's what Charlie introduced later, is a lambda function. So a lot of the interface between the, if you want to use in Python to work with Spark, a lot of those anonymous functions and function defined in the Scala are translated into a lambda function form, and you just do corresponding translations, you will be able to use the Python's very well with those sparks. So for the control part, it support the while loop and the for loop, but in the Scala, it's more preferred to the math loop. So in this slide, I show several comparisons, and basically, we have a list, and we have a similar example before where we want to multiply by 2, but in this case, we want to print out each element in the orders. So the while loop is not much different than before, but just in this case, we do not hold in a return value, so we don't really need a placeholder for the return value here. So for the for loops, and you can use in the same for loop structures to support something, and then you can just have single line, just to print out that lines. Also in Scala, you do not have to worry about the indent. So it will automatically recognize that, and you also doesn't really need to add any special characters at end of the end of your statement as well. So once you're used to it, you feel it's a more natural way to how you're writing things or how you do things without a lot of the restrictions as well. Okay. If you need multiple statement, just put them into the parentheses. This is a for loop. It's just basically saying for each I in this list, you print out this I. Right? It also has a for each characters. So basically, that for each will became to say it's similar to the math. Just to say for each element in here, what we want to do. So in this case, we define it's for each element in this, we just simply print out the result like that. Finally, you have the map parameters to do the loop through the list. It's a similar case, and to do the map from X to the print the X out here. Okay. Questions? No questions? Okay, I have a question. So, do you feel the for each and the map are the same? So why are they redundant? Should the developer get rid of one? Yes, sir. Hey, very good. Yeah, so if you notice the difference, and we have a return value for the math, and we do not have a return value for the for each. So for each, it's really like a heap return, and a heap return through your list. But itself, it's actually return something, it's just a nil, it's just like not output. And the my is always return value. So in this case, we'll just return a list of null values there. So that's one of the difference. And if you want to do something, just print out things, you don't really care the return result. You do not really need using the my function, where you will get an empty, like an empty, but take some space out of the parameters out. So you can try these functions out if you get chance with a setting or with the Scala interpreters. You will see the return functions are different. Okay, that's great. So other than loop, the other thing we commonly use is a conditional controls. So we have if else, and you can iterate through them. So for each of the elements, you can add in a if else statement to say if this one is an odd number, then what we do, if it's an even number, what we do, right? The list also have a special function called filters, and later we can, in some example, I will introduce that later with this part. That can be used more effectively to do the some of the conditional like this. And the other special control flow using Scala is a kind of match case functions. So it's the same problems, and we can have the for each loop like this. So we iterating through the list, and then for each one, we're going to print out the results. But also we can do is we can have the condition being at the beginning, so we want to do this function first, and then we evaluate what the result of this function match to. Then based on the result, we will do things differently. Okay? So in this case, like you have a function, the nonlinear function being defined for the given x, we will run this if statement, and here is a reveal first to see what's the remainder of the x divided by 2, what's the remainder of x by 2. Then based on, then we will match our remainder into two different cases. If it's a match to 1, we will print them out. If it is a match to nothing or all else, here again we use this underscore as a placeholder, which means anything, basically. But then we will just do nothing. So you can have this empty space, this means do nothing. So the for each use the quite a bit as the match case use the quite a bit as well in the Scala, and it simplifies especially when you have a micro conditions. And remember yesterday we had a case we want to do if else has some nice loop. So match case sometimes can be rather simpler because you only need to do conditional testing once at the beginning, and then just try to match the result to whichever branch you want to go to. The other things about the match case use is in the Scala is a strong typing, so even if you do not get the type, it's going to automatically infer the type for it. So it doesn't like R or Python where the type can dynamically adjust based on what you need there. In the Scala, it doesn't do that. But so the match case sometimes can be applied to the types. In this, what I show is briefly just an overview how the types in the Scala being organized. So basically the Scala has a base type called any, so that's just representing to anything, can belong to there. So you can use that as really the things representing any possible input or output you have. So one way of using the match type is to, you can define a very generic functions, but when you give a different type of the parameter as an input, it can do different things. Right, so for example, in this case, we have defined a function that could take the all kind of possibilities, and then we will match it. If it is an integers, we will do it is integers. If it is float, we will do it is float, and so on. Then when you pass in different type of the values into it, it will give you the corresponding result. So that makes the function more generic, and you can easily apply them into different type of the objects, not being limited. You don't need to write one for string and write another one for the numerical values, so make them more easily maintained and more readable. Okay. On the other hand, if you're new to Scala or new to Spark, sometimes this may cause some confusion because same function, seemingly same function, will give different parameters that may give you different, they make things behave differently. All right. So that's a that's a kind of the some highlights I pick. I think it's important, especially for people already know another programming language and trying to understand more about what Scala can do, and more importantly, maybe able to help you to understand better about a common structure problem within Scala, and also helps you to be able to convert to the new case. Okay? I was initially trying to finish this before the break, so I was actually going to give you homework during the break. It's to, like yesterday, I think Charlie teach you how to calculate in time. Charlie fixing how geeks we are, so I feel a little bit ashamed. So anyways, I want you to you can be calculating pi this is that as well. If you're interested, go ahead and try it. And it's very similar to the Python. It could be very similar to the Python, and it could be very concise and much more concise for than Python as well. So just do it as you wish. The other things is you can do is I had a notebook for that means on those exercises. I do not have especially for the rest of the slides. So if you go to the shared directory, and the shared directory is here, and that URL also posts in the website, right? You post there, you will find a JSON file called spark-basic-v2 or something like that. I may change the name. You can download the JSON file to your local computers. So it is a JSON file, so it's readable. You can open it up. So that's how Zeppelin capture the notebook. So once you have a Zeppelin notebook, you can export them as a JSON file, and you can link it to another machines or another clusters, and you can load it up and run it. Okay? So that's a JSON file I have made, and which has some code, and I will show next, that's more specifically related to the Spark. Okay? So if you have the Zeppelin working and running, if you have a slide, you can just click the link here. If you do not, and go to your class website and click the link here, and go to the directory, you may see JSON files. And once you see the JSON files, and you can go back to the Zeppelin homepage. There's a import note options in the Zeppelin homepage here. You click it, it will pop up a Windows with you have two options, one is iFrom URL, and the one is the choose the JSON here. So if you already downloaded, just click that one. It will show your file browser, so just choose the file you just downloaded, give ID name, and then you can import it in. So once it's imported here, you may see something like this. Spark Basic V2, so that's the name of that notebook. So I will give you like maybe 2 minutes trying to locate this and download it. So is there anyone already import this one here? Okay, great. If you have problems to locate the URL or find or downloading them or import, just let us know. So was a problem. Okay, so anyone still have problems or raise your hand if you'll be able to successfully import notes. Okay, so what you have in that notes is fairly long, so this has a lot of the exercise, like simple code block corresponding to some of the main features of Spark. If you are going to use Spark in the future, whether you use Python or using the Scalas, and you can refer them back for some examples. On the code here, especially for this code, I hope that organizing them into the different blocks. So the first one is illustrating the my functions, and for each of them, we basically have a two paragraph here. So one paragraph is the native Scala implementations. And the other one is, you see, they're starting with a PySpark, so that's their Python interface of the Spark. So all the things here are straight Python programming language. So you can write Python here and do that. So I have them here just to be able to show you the give a comparison on Scala version and the Python version. So for example, for the simple case of the math functions, this is only all of them have a three line. The first line is basically create a RDBs. So the RDB is generated from a list. So the list is automatically generating from the 0 to 100. Then we're parallelizing them to make them as RDB. Then we just apply the math function. So this math function I've seen several times. We just go into times 2 for that. Then we collect the result. You can click the small button here and it should run it. When the first time when you run anything in the notebook, it may take a while. Because it's the first time it's running, it's trying to talk with the Hadoop clusters and make connection and establish the applications inside the clusters. So the second time you run it, it should be much faster. Then you see that the output is the first line is creating the RDB. Then the second line is the mapping, and the result is an integer array, so everything is multiplied by 2 from 0 to 99. So the Python version should be very similar, very familiar to you already. I think you did something similar before. So notice that the syntax of define the list is a little bit different. So there's no until keywords in the Python. So you need to use the rich. You can, that's the closest equivalent. There's, of course, there's other ways you can generate them. Then you generate list and you can call the same, basically the same syntax, the power line and the generating the RDBs. And then once you generate the RDB, you can call the same API, the RDB.py, trying to write a function to it. So here is a Scala anonymous function we pass through, so just the X and IR, the extension tool. So if you want, you can put a simplifier into just a placeholder. In the Python, this is pretty much the only way to do anonymous function, you do lambda function. Where you have X as input, then your return is X as input. The rest of them are most of them are equivalent. So all the things here, when you do the PySpark and it will convert them and interpreting them and pass them into the GLAM and it runs through the same Spark framework for the execution later on. Okay? So let's just look at the math function. Any questions about this? So you can run the Python version. In the Zapier, it supports a lot of the different interpreters. And one thing about Python is, so you can specify which language interpreter you want to use. So you just have a percentage sign and followed by the keyword for that language. Notice here, what I do is a PySpark. So the PySpark is actually calling a different executable of Python that comes with Spark. So that's one has been changed a little and been tailored for the Spark to use. So if you want to use Python work with Spark, so you probably need using a PySpark. In the Zapier also support the regular Pythons. So if you decide you do just do Python here, it will interpret this block as a regular Python. Python block, but then you will get errors because a lot of things are specific to the Spark, it won't pick up, it won't recognize that. Okay. Any questions? PySpark is a separate Python distribution that when you're downloading the Spark or when you install Spark, it comes with a Spark. So the Spark developer has made some modification with the Python, so the PySpark can pick up a lot of the Spark context as well. So it's not a library you import to the regular Python, so it's a change to some base code of the Python so it can have a more thinly connection to the Spark. Okay. So they do map to the two different sets of the executables and the libraries, But normally the regular Python library, you can use them with PySpark. Just something PySpark can do, the regular Python cannot do. Okay, that's a good question. Any other questions here? So anyone wondering what this IC stands for? See, that's one of the things. Like if I do not do PySpark, I just do Python here, one of the errors it actually going to report is going to say the name IC is not defined because it's not recognized by the regular Python. So that's one of the things of PySpark doing something different than this. Okay, so what IC stands for here is stands for the Spark Compact. Let's go back to my slides here. Is we mentioned the Spark as a language and on top of the R and on its own. So there's a Spark core and a set of libraries that doing additional processing and again give you additional functionalities with Spark. But Spark core is the one that sort of recognizing what you want to do and trying to organize it for the jobs and trying to make those distribution, trying to tracking all those RDE. So the Spark contact, and the, so each time we will start a Spark application or Spark job, the first thing you will do is actually to create a Spark contact. So that Spark contact is like your master thread that oversees the rest of the Spark applications here. So in a standalone Scala or Python program, you will have a line to set up something like import Spark, then the create a Spark compact as IC or something, then later you can use IC. With Zepkins, when you start the Zepkins and the first time you run it, first of all, Zepkins has an IC compact folder there, and then the first time you are running it, it's trying to initialize a Spark compact automatically with the existing Spark clusters or a local Spark clusters. So in the Zepkin code, you won't see an explicitly start of that IC compact there. But that IC, that Spark compact is important. It's kind of the master object, and all the other things will happen under this particular Spark compact. It's actually similar implementations with Hadoop. In Hadoop, there are also a concept of the Hadoop compact. And all the things we mentioned, the mapper sketching the data from the compact, and then the mapper will write the data back to that compact. So that compact will materializing how the data being parsing through between different stage. So the Spark compact is exactly the same concept here. Just think about them as a master thread that oversee all the things and create all the things here. Okay. So RDD is a basic structure in the Spark. So for the all the paragraph you see in my examples is basically always starting with this line. So this is one of the simple ways to create a RDE on the fly. So you basically give a list. Then you tell I'm going to use in the Spark context to parallelize it. Okay. So your Spark context will be initializing is tied to certain infrastructure. It could be just your local machines or it could be a real Hadoop clusters. You know, that means we are currently running is automatically connected and tied into the Hadoop cluster we already have in the background. Okay, so we talked about the Scala for a while, so now it's something more special in the Spark. So one of the first things hit people is this lazy evaluation concept. So how many of you heard about this term of the lazy evaluation? None of you? So how many of you write in a program before? Yeah, most of you have program before. So when you write something, you especially in the Jupyter sense, right? You write one line, you click run, you expect that line to be run and generate some result here, right? So that is in contrast to the lazy evaluation, that's sort of the immediate evaluation of every statement there. But that's not true with the Spark here. So that's why we call it lazy evaluation. So which means not all the statements are immediately executed when the program passes through it. So instead, the program will kind of do a pass and assemble an execution plan first to look at what you want to do. and certain functions that only define what you want to do, but doesn't tell the program to do it yet. So if you're only running those statements, you'll be running five of those statements, but your program is basically doing sort of like, oh, I'm going to write this, I plan to do this. And only later when you have some trigger function, if you trigger to say now, I'm ready to run this file entirely. So that's why we call it a lazy evaluation, because now all the statements are immediately to run. So that's very important if you have something that doesn't work, you want to debug. So if you have your breakpoint or stop points in the middle of a non-evaluated functions, and you may feel it does nothing, but because it's indeed do nothing. So with that being said, there are two types of functions with RDBE. So one we call the transformation functions, which is one that do not immediately execute. So whenever you define a map, is an example. So in the map function, what we're doing here is we tell the Spark framework, we want to apply this function to all the things of this RDBE. Right? But Spark doesn't necessarily do that when you're just typing it here. So there's a set of the functions that RDBE support that belong to the transformation functions, like my and future and goodbye. And correspondingly, the other type of function called actions. So action is the one who actually execute. So it will trace back to see what the plan so far and what the statement has been accumulated so far, and then we're going to execute them all, right? So that's why if you look at this, the simplest example with the map functions, we have a three line here. The first line is basically generating that RDBE, right? The second line is that we're trying to define that map functions. And we always have a third line where we call collect. So why we have to hide this line? So what if I do not run this line, what will happen? If I do not run this, so what will happen here? Well, we can try, right? So see, it's only going to say, I'm going to define this RDBE as is, and I'm going to do a map partition RDBE based on this map function, so it doesn't really run the map yet. But even you get the, just get the output, you want to see it, it's still nothing in there. Like there's no context in there. So it's because the function, you only define a plan, you haven't actually really executed them. So that's why we really need the action. So the fact is one of the actions that will basically trigger. So now I'm going to run my function so that people run it. So without tag, your function basically do nothing. So if you can have 10 lines on transformation function, we put the code without the action, it will never going to be run. Okay. That's the same thing with the Python implementation, because Python is just using the syntax of the Python language, but we want to do the Spark and also the up to the Spark Spark framework to decide when to execute in which things. So any questions about this? Is that something surprise or interesting? So have you seen this in other languages before or other cases? Okay. You can think about why we Spark want to do this. I don't expect you can give me an answer now, but tomorrow I will come back to these questions and to see if anyone comes any particular insights with why Spark you want to do this. And I have some slides talk about more about internal Spark and that can give a little bit of explanations why Spark want to do these evaluations. Okay. So but now what the things you really need to keep in mind is the distinction between transformation function and action functions. Okay. So the next several slides and basically run through the common transformation and the action functions and to see what they were doing. So the first one is what we already mentioned or see several times, the basic map functions. So formally, it's a map functions. It's a you pass a functions in as a parameter in. It applies to every element in that RDBE. And then as a result, it will generate an RDBE back. Right? So the RDBE can can kind of have a different type. So you have one type here, you apply and transform into a different type, then you get a different type of REDs. So that's an example that I have in the first segment in the example for the testing for the notebook as well. So if you want to play that one later, so you can add more function in there, and all the other things you can do is you can increase the range of it and to see the parallelism at work, or comparing them into a non-Spark version. So you can easily either write a Python version without using Spark, like regular Python version, to do this, and comparing to how that performs comparing to the PySpark version to see if we really need function recovery. So the other functions is the reduce functions, the RDE support. So the map function is maybe nothing special, or you see that in the Scala as well. So the Scala list also has a map function, basically map things into there. Now you also see the reduce function that reminds you something we talked about yesterday, the map reduce programming model here, right? So that's what I mean to say is the map reduce programming model is really kind of a cornerstone for the big data analysis. And a lot of other programming framework, even they are seems very different now, but they have this core concept of map and reduce being put together and to make things working, right? So that is very important for you to understanding, having that concept in mind to understanding here. So for example, this is maybe a really weird code if you're looking at them. So basically, we have the RDE first. So RDE is easy, so we just do a list, then do a parallelize of them to do whatever partition is. Now we call the reduce, and we have a two placeholder, and we just plus them together. Anyone have ideas what that does? Or how it works? So first of all, can you guess what the final result of these two lines will be? Yes. Yes, exactly. So it will sum the number of the list. But how do you interpret this placeholder plus placeholder? Okay, so to understanding this, I want to recall when we talked about yesterday the map and reduce things. We said the map is a take a key value pair in and send the return key value pair out, right? So that's similar, like we have the RDE in, then we have RDE out. And for the reduce function, if you recall yesterday, what the reduce function in map reduce take is one key and a list of the values. And what the reduce will does is to go through that list of values and sum them together. So the implementation here of the reduce, you see it takes two parameters and you generate one parameter. But in this case, it doesn't have a key here. So what it takes is it's kind of what they call a commutative and associative binary operators, where it's just starting with a left and a plus one, so that became your first parameters, and then plus the second parameters. And then they do that iteratively until the end. So basically this is a type of the operators that used in the Spark that are trying to simplify the discrete definition of I want to sum up, or not necessarily just a sum up, but I want to go through do something with the list of the list of values here. Okay. So one of the placeholders is placeholder for previous result of this operation, and then the other placeholder is for the next elements in my list. Does that make sense now? So if you have the seconds, and that's the second block I have here about reduce, it's very simple here. And also reduce is actually an action that will trigger, it's the execution here. So if we run this, we will get the result of sum of 1 to 10 is a 45. I have corresponding the PySpark versions. it is similar, but just in this case, you can see more clearly it will take two parameters in, and then the return is x plus y. But just in this case, x is representing the result from previous iterations. Y is representing to the current element, so basically, I in the previous one into the current one. You can instead of doing pass, you can try to do say match line to see if it's work or try to see if it can work with other operators. Okay. Any questions? So as I keep mentioning, sort of like my videos is a serve as a foundation for a lot of things to spark this evolution or expansion of the MapReduce power. So the MapReduce models, the basic function or operation you're doing is just map and reduce. So as part of this expanding the feature side, the Spark also has a lot of more map function and the reduce function that might work. So some of the commonly used ones, so the next function I want to introduce is the flat map functions. So this one is nothing really special, and it's just traversing through all the elements, it's doing the map, but sometimes your map will apply your function to each individual element. The result for that element may become another disk or another composite values. Then the flat pipe just trying to flatten them out instead of return the least result. So in the example we are having here is we starting with the list. So this list is four numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4. And then we parallelize them by the RDD. Then we do the map functions and then we pass them to say, so can you tell me what this map function means? Anyone? So your input is x, right? So the output will be a new piece with a 3 on that x inside. Right? So if you just do a regular map, what you will get is four elements, and each element is a list of 3 redundant values there. Right? That's probably fine, but a lot of time, that nested structure may produce some problem we want to do the subsequent processing. So the flat pipe is just a direct way for you to flatten that one out as a non-nested list here. So instead of having an array of 3-1 as one list and a 3-4 and a 3-4-1, so now you have an array of 12 elements and just each one is repeated 3 times there. Okay. So do you think about the case you want to use it now or no? So do you have ideas like if there's a good, under which situations you want to use a flat map? Or can you recall in the previous, when working on any program in other language, have you ever encountered such some cases you just don't like the nested list or you're wishing it is just flat out list? You do? So there's a couple of reasons why Spark wants to have a special operators doing this. Is one is a when we talk about big data, whenever we want to reflect on the structures, like if you do in Java or even do it in the Python, you already have a nice structures with a list of the list, and when you want to convert it into a new list, it's often a time you need to create a separate memory space to be able to put your new list into there to make it workable. So the flattening the list out sometimes may be a very memory intensive operation if your list is very big, right? So the way the Spark implementing, so that part of things, with the lazy evaluation and they assemble the plans, and they see you want to wipe them out, so that flighting can happen in place which means you do not require additional memories and to be able to achieve that. Okay? So that is actually a very important thing with a lot of big data processing. Since, if you not be careful, and you can easily using too much memory where it's not necessary. Right? So here you can try to say, I'm going to do a map, I'm getting those, and I'm just using a for loop, and try to extract them out, putting them into a list buffer, then that this buffer will use the equal amount of the memory as actually the list. So which make your program less effective. Okay. So does that make some sense now? Okay, so that's another very commonly used map functions. The other one is called the map partitions. So this one is a little bit easier to understand. It's a recall when we talk about the RDD, we said it's a resilient distributed data structure. So the RDD will be divided as a partition, and you have different partitions. So the map partitions is basically saying instead of the regular map, I want to map the functions applied to each individual element in my RDDs. I only want to apply them, I want to treat each partition as a whole and apply the function to there. Okay? So the example here is just do a sum. So what this tool line does is first line is it's the same thing like with the Spark context. We do a parallax and the list is 0 till 8. Now you notice we have additional parameters that are given to there. We didn't use before, so it's 2. So can you guess what this 2 does? Yes? I know it's a very common mistake, so that's why I'm asking this. So first of all, the 0 until 8 can support that, but you need parentheses to parentheses them together. So make them think this is part of that, and it's a different keyword. And here, the comma separating them as a 2 parameter pass to the parallax, not to the 0 until 8. So the 2 is not a parameter given to the 0 until 8. So what the 2 specifies in this case, I want to explicitly make 2 partitions of my list, right? Without it, the Spark context will automatically do that. So it will based on, it's again, it's similar with the Hadoop. It will based on how big your data it is and where the data is coming from and how much resource it is. It can automatically generate it so that they have a certain principle to follow, trying to maximize the parallelism while not incur too much memory usage or data movements. But also you can optionally say, I just want 2 partitions, or I want to number 8 partitions here. Okay, so we have them here just trying to explicitly make, I want to have a 2 partition RDD in this case. Okay. So now this RDD has 2 partitions. They will just do a break, so you have 0, basically you have 0 to 4, and then you have a 5 to 8 and another partition. Then we apply the function here, is to say the input x, then we want to do the sum of the x. Then the return is a little bit weird, so that's the requirements I have to use to be able to show them later. But what the function says is I know the for the map partitions, I'm not apply that into each individual element. I'm going to apply that into the entire partition I have. So how many partitions I have here? 2, right? So we will only have a 2x in plus to the first partition and the second partition. Then for each partition, I will do a summation of that list. So that's the same as we do the reviews of that. So can you guys, what's the return result of this code block? Yes, it will be 2 elements, and each will be the sum of each one of the partitions here. So exactly, so the first one we will have a single, we only do 8 elements, so first one is 0, 1, 2, 3, so sum together is 6. So the next one will be 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, so that sum together can be 2. Okay. So again, can you think of any case in your past experience you might need those, these type of functions? or what's the reason, or any thoughts about why we want to separate the operation here? Yes, it will be more efficient than, say, technically, what you want to achieve here can be done with a map function, right? So you can do map, and then you can say, I want to, for the first part, I do this map, I do this, and for the next part, I do that, right? But when you do that, you for the large list, you may have to consider how well your menu separation maps to how the data actually being distributed. And in this case, you don't need to worry about that. And you have the knowledge, knows that each function will always apply to the data locally available. So in a sense, it's a compared to you manually code it, to say, for the first one, I do this, for the second one, I do this. It will have more guarantee each function will work just on the local data there. So it's a set, it is consistent with the important concept we have with big data processing, is to reduce the data movements, but bring more computations the data layers. So you can, for this one, you can also see my example here. And I have the corresponding PyStar examples, so which make more easier to understand compared to the Scala syntax. So basically, we are making a lambda function here, and just for each lambda function, we assuming that the input will be a list of values, and then the values will be summed up together. Right? Now, if you still have some questions about this or want to understand more, you can actually print out the values, individual values, and you can see what the partitions look like and what each partition does. Right? You can also change the lambda function. Instead of doing sum, you can just say do print, and then that will help you understand that. Or you can change them into a different operator that can help you to understand them better. Okay. Okay, so one more function I want to introduce is a filter function. So
sorry, just a quick question. So I use three instead of two partitions. So, but I try to understand the output because it's 1, 9, and 80. So, what is the logic behind this partition?
So you are referring to the map partition things?
Yeah, instead of two, place three.
So the map partition is first of all, we create a list with a 0 to 8, right? When we do the RDDs, and we create a two partition. So basically, two partition, if you think about one list of 0 to 8, now became a nested list with one list to be 0 to 3, and the other will be 4 to 7, right? And then for the back partitions, and for the sum, and we will sum the first partitions, all the elements in the first suffix, the first partition together, and all the elements in the second partition.
So can you run this equation with three? It's just instead of two, can you?
So it should be 6 and 22 here.
Yeah, you need 2. Yeah, okay. Sorry. Okay, yeah. No, instead of two, the last. In the line, when you have range 0 from 8, can you remove the 2 and place 3?
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So it will break them into three partitions. So now in this case, the first partition will be 0, 1. The next partition will be 2, 3. Yeah, the rest will belong to the third partition.
Okay. So the first partition is two numbers, the second partition is three numbers, and the third partition is three numbers. Okay.
So it's a two number, and three numbers.
The rest? No.
The rest is actually four numbers.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Thank you. So.
Okay. Oh, so you were asking why it do the...
Yeah, what is the logic, what is the logic behind this, the bar partitions when...
I'm not sure, actually.
Yeah.
I think what it does is do a top-down partitions. So you try to divide them into two halves. Mm-hmm. Then you start with dividing them into another two halves. So when you add the three, so it's the first break into 4-4. Then it breaks the first half 4-4 into 2-2. But you only add the three, so it will get 2-4-4. So if you do four partitions, it will definitely going to be three, like four two elements here, right? If you do five, I think that the last one will always be bigger. You understand what I'm saying? So it's, they do a binary split this time. So they do one half, then they do further partition, then do further partition until reach to one. So if they always do from left to right, then your end always have a bigger partition. Okay? That's actually a good question. That's the first time I don't ask that question. So the filter functions.
Excuse me.
Okay.
We were wondering because we changed like the partitions in the two functions you used, and they're different. So we were wondering if this is the map part of the map reduce. Doesn't matter, the result is different because after the certain shuffle, the end will be the same, right?
So you run the same function twice, and it became different results?
No. In the chunk before that one?
Oh, so you the scalar version and the Python version
gave
you different results?
Yeah.
That's actually possible.
If you use three partitions, the result is actually different.
Let me see that. Yeah, so looks like the scalar version is doing 2-3-3 split, and then the Python version doing so why is the 2-3-3 and why is the 2-2-4? So I think that's the same. Like it's just I'm not sure how, but I think it is the different computations and how the how this list being presented to the algorithm is a different thing. So the partition of became different. It might have to do with because in the Python you have everything writing in the beginning of the list, then it's maybe just based on the memory type for the allocation to do the partitions. But in the Scala, so it's all the allocation plan. And you actually run my partition is trying to do that, so it might be create more balanced partitions than the transpart versions. Okay, any other questions? Yeah, there's a lot of things you can experiment with. I typically just using Scala with Spark. So I only had these Python versions for the past. And I'm very happy you guys really running them and compiling them. This is the first time people actually care and do that. So it helps me to learn a lot. Like I really don't know Python and Scala perform differently on that. So the other functions I want to introduce is the filter functions. Where you can pass in a function that can help you to do the conditional check for conditions and then return a part of your list back. So you can apply them into the RDBs and say in these examples and we have all the numbers in the 100 and then we want to find out all the even numbers. So what we are parsing through is a function that's going to map to going to have a result to be a Boolean result, and then based on a Boolean result, the result RDB will only have the elements that have the true values of the result in there. So it is a way that can help you to quickly subset your list for DUIs and single programs. So just for this one, this should be fairly easy to understand. And the way for each element, we will check if it can be divided by two without any reminder. So if it does, so it returns true, then it will, then that is what its elements will be left in the return without errors. Okay, so yeah, I think I won't be able to finish the slide, but I can pick up from tomorrow. So far what we're talking about here, all the functions are applied to the RDE. So in this case, there's no key, no value, it's just one piece of value specific to the RDE. So that's the functions you can apply to. So in addition to the just apply to the RDE, the recall in the MapReduce models, the uniform the representation of the data is a key value pair. So all the data basically come with that form. In the Spark, it also supports, and in a lot of cases, you may still need a key value pair form. So the RDD also supports the operations using a tuple where you have a definition of the key here. Okay. So for example, we just see the filter functions, where we can give is a conditional functions that will help us to only select half of the list of. But what if our goal was to separate them? So we have an even number and we have odd numbers and begin two. So that's where the function like the group by key becomes in handy is we basically passing through the same function, right? So it's the same conditional function we are parsing in there. But it will based on the result, using that result as a key, applied to each function, to each element as a key to automatically create a implicitly key value pair. So in this case, the key is a function that being returned. It's a return result, and the value is your input result, okay? So what this function does, it will actually generating an array of the two lists. So one is all the even numbers and one is all the odd numbers. Okay. Does that make some sense? So this is a very convenient and useful functions where you can have A functions to apply to your each individual element that can assess a label or assess a category to it. Then you can ask your group by function to automatically separate them, or further you can do a sum by group or do some iteration. Very easy, very convenient to do that. So let's see how many. So given a function to create a key is one way you can create a key out of the RDE functions, and the other one you allow is to zip with the index. This is another interesting one. You can try with evaluating the Python and the Scala version, but they may also perform differently. What this one does is say the RDE is a list of values, right? So there's no index. In fact, in fact, it's going to be a distributed index. Distributed list make it impossible for us to assign a numerical index to it. So unlike the normal Java or Python list, we can easily say, I'm going to get the list at position one, position two. There's no such thing because it's being distributed out. You need to know which partition comes first, which partition comes later, right? So there's no fixed order of your list, but you distribute them out, you try to move back. So what zip with indexes does is it can give one set of ordering to your list and make that more referenceable by the index. And what it does is by the first is based on certain orders, and each element in your RDE get assigned an index, and then it will create a tuple with that value with that index. So that's what you're going to see here. So when we do this list is a four character A B C E. And then we do the zip with the index, we will bind 0 into the first one, that's the order it has in the list, and then 1, 2, 3, and the corresponding one. So the later you can apply other function to it. So you want to only act on elements as position 2 or position 3 or do something. So that's the more you use it, it actually became a very common scenario you need to have some index of your array of your connections. So this is a difference than the alternative approach where you collecting all the lists into one node, then you have automatic ordering of them and you can do things. The database index, they still generating RDD, so they are still distributed out. They're just assigning a ordering into your data sphere. So again, it's a lot of time you have to do it because you do not have enough memory space in one node to collect in the node. Okay, so I think I only have a couple more functions, so I want to finish them before, so we can pick up to a different topic. Maybe a few, several moments. I think it's next time. So we talk about so that's the two functions that can act on the concept of the key value pairs. But in that case, the key value pairs is more implicitly defined. So one is an output of your function you pass through, and the other one is a ordering you can assess on the RDDs. There are also the set of functions that can be done based on the group of the RDDs, based on the pair of RDDs. We can assume the pair of RDD has a certain relationship so that we can produce them, we can treat them as a key value pair that being stored separately. So here's one example on the RDD group by keys. So we have the tuples, and then the difference between here and here is in the previous state with index. We have the list, then we do parallels, then we do the database index after we make it at the RDD. And in the parallel RDD transformations, we can first apply the database index to create a list of tuples, and then at the RDD, then the RDD will recognize that tuples as one being key and one being base values. And then when we do the group by keys, in this case, what you will see so in this case, the key will be the first elements, the A and the 0, and the B and the 1, and the second one will be B and the 1. And then that's the first line, we will do the parallel, and when you do the group by keys, it will automatically use the first line as the keys, and it will collect them as a C1 group, as a group by A, and 1 is the key is B. So it has each one has a two array is their original index in the original when you do the database indexes. Okay. So this may look very similar with the previous database index and group by key, but the ordering when you do the database index makes the difference here. So similarly, there's a reduced by key functions. It's the same concept here. Once we have the keys, it's more corresponding to how the reduced by key works, and you will apply the same reduce function to all the things with the same key here, right? So in this case, in the previous case, the result will be A and the array of the index where A appears in the original RDD, and here will be the sum of those index together. So A will become the 0 plus 2, and B became the 1 plus 3. I think this is the last RDD function I want to introduce is the join functions, where you can join the, kind of matching two RDD together, and then join them together. So in these examples, we start with the three separate RDD list. So the first list is basically people's name, and the second is people's age, and then the third one is their department where they belong to. So what we can do is we can first call the zip functions that basically binds the person RDD with 8 RDDs, and then we can bind them again. We can bind the person RDD with the department RDD again. Then we can join the two RDD we created based on the person names, based on the same person names. So it's like we create the same idea, just in this case, the first RDD will use the person name as a key, and the age as a value, and the second one will use the person as a key, and the department as a values. When we do the join, it will join by that key, so you will get this person's name as a key as an output, then each value will be a list, including actually a tuple with an age and the departments as a result. All right, so I think I will just stop here. So we will pick up maybe from tomorrow and talk about more about some other functions as far as and support and get some more examples. So some just recap on this is remember the lazy evaluations, and so there's two type of actions, the action and the transformation functions. Either exercise, and you can do this afternoon, and your Zappy notebook should be open until end of the day. If it's done, you can go back to the slides, follow the same procedure, step by step, 2, step 3, and you can start another Zappy instance, especially if you get chance to really practice yourself in the class, and you can do that tonight or when less people you say, right? So one interesting thing is, what I really would like you to try is maybe you can do even a version of how you can calculate in Pi with a Spark, with just a regular Scala. You already did that with the Python, so you can have a Scala version. Now you can have a Spark version on how you calculate in that scale. Okay. All right, so let's have lunch.